come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, foolish mortals, and the rest of you. You've stumbled upon the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. We're a movie review podcast where every week a new movie is chosen round robin by one of the Saturday Night Freak Show members, and then we gather at the bar and talk about it for your entertainment and listening pleasure. Who are the Saturday Night Freak Show regulars, you ask?
Holly.
Travis.
And I'm Colin. And tonight we listened... Or we listened to a movie.
I did listen to it. Yeah. That's fair to say.
We gathered I did both. To watch a movie. Oh, and by the way, I should also point out before we get going here that please subscribe if you haven't already to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, YouTube, and more. Or give us a star rating or a thumbs up or a like because that helps us find other.
A funny emoji. Just something.
Yeah.
Something.
It helps us find other like-minded folks like yourself. What do we watch tonight, Holly?
Tonight, we watched 1985 Legend by Ridley Scott.
31 years ago.
Love of the Sun.
Yes.
Love of the Sun.
You have a thing for that guy from Yes, right?
No, well, Tangerine Dream.
Yes.
Yeah, but they didn't have a vocalist. We looked
the
it up. It's the guy
is
from
the
Yes.
The lead singer from Yes.
It is. Holy yeah. shit. I did not know that.
Yes. I didn't
so yes, I do. I absolutely do have a thing for Yes, and the soundtrack of this movie. Very fond of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Legend comes at us from Ridley Scott, who continually tinkers with his movies years after they've been created.
He's just gonna like perfect everything, though, right?
He's an
just
artist.
Like,
it's never quite good.
I want
enough.
To make the perfect like. Space horror movie. Boom. I want to make the perfect, like, cybernetic punk, like, boom. I want to make the perfect fairy tale, like, boom. He used to be awesome at that.
Yeah. Well, this was what his, so, I mean, at the time in 1985, then he would have been, was it 85 or 86?
It was 85.
For some reason I was thinking it was a 30 year.
Mm-mm.
But he had scored big with Alien in 79 and Blade Runner mm-hmm. in 82. And I can't remember what he did in between, if anything.
There was one more. I can't remember.
It's not Someone to Watch Over Me because that came later. And Black Rain was later. After he got out of the fantasy sci-fi genre until Prometheus, he went back to it. And his big historical epics and military films that he's known
Sword
for
and
now.
Sandal movies.
Yeah.
That he's been doing for so long now.
But he had, I think at the time he was known as a very visual filmmaker. Like he was renowned for his artistic stamp that he put on mm-hmm. on films. And so that was kind of why you went to see a Ridley Scott movie when it came out.
Yeah. Everything is pretty photo perfect.
And I can't remember, like, so the resurgence in fantasy films was because of, I mean, Star Wars
Conan,
and then Conan the Barbarian, right?
Right.
Yeah, maybe Clash of the Titans. I don't know.
Because we had that like with the special effects of the 80s, then we could do these things and sculpt these amazing
makeups. That's what I liked
makeups.
About the 80s was just doing the, like, the perfect rendition of every sort of, like, fan. I mean, just mm-hmm. because special effects have gotten so far, they're just like, mm-hmm. oh, we need to do a monster movie. We need to do a this type of movie, like anything, fairy tale mm-hmm. movie, a sword and sorcery movie. Or,
yeah. Oh, Sword and the Sorcerer. Right. Did you say that already?
Excalibur. Right?
Yeah, Excalibur. Yeah.
And that was the funny thing about Ridley Scott was that, you know, he'd done his space sci-fi with Alien and he'd done these fantastical movies. And he knew, he's like, I gotta get this fairy tale out of my system before I can do a more modern movie. He's like, I've got these epic movies that are all of other worlds or futuristic or
did he
whatever.
Write this?
No, he didn't. He went to William Hortzberg,
yep.
who had written... William, he was mainly doing screenplays, but he had done some books and...
William Hortzberg had written a novel called Falling Angel. Now,
yes.
I never read the novel, but it formed the basis of one of my favorite movies, Angel Heart.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah, that's his. So that's why I recognize his name. So who came up with the concept then? Is this
He went to William Hortzberg, Ridley Scott did, and he said, look, I want to make a fairy tale movie. I want to make a fantastic fairy tale movie. Here's what I want. I want it to have unicorns, and I want it to have a villain named Darkness. Go. And that's all he told him. And he just ran with it, and he came up with this amazing script that was legend. And everyone that read it, like the first draft, was just completely hooked by it. Everyone was sucked in, even like executives. No one was like, no, this needs work. No, everyone wanted to be behind this.
Well, now I'm guessing, I'm not guessing, maybe. Maybe I heard this on a commentary track or something, but was it true that like Hertzberg's original draft was like, you know, basically a novel. It had like all sorts of crazy detail packed into it. It was like, okay, we have to pare this down to make it like filmable at a budget.
Yeah. Rob Bottin. Thank you. I can never remember how to say his name. He looked at it and he read it and he read
this
it
is
through
the makeup effects.
Makeup
guy.
Effects artist. Thank you. He went through it and he was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. It sucked me in. He read it like a novel. And then he reread it, making his notes of what he would have to do. And he realized that it's like millions of characters. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to have to show this to Ridley because I don't know if this is going to work. And similar things happen with executives. And they're just like, yeah, this is a lot. This is this is too much.
Actually kind of an interesting approach to doing a fantasy movie then at this point in time, because you had like, okay, I mean, the biggest thing in the fantasy genre had to be the Lord of the Rings, the written Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
So fantasy then becomes orcs and Uruk-hai.
The D&D version, right? Dragons. Yeah. And this like chose to go fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They chose to go, which I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just because there was so much of the D&D orc. Like, you know, I mean, this at least stood out. Because, I mean, when I think of, like, 80s fairy tale movie, like, I could think of The Last Unicorn and this are, like, the only movies I like with unicorns.
I think those are the two that everyone thinks of.
You know? Because, like, I mean, they just didn't do the unicorn fairyland, you know? They wanted to do the hardcore battle shit, you know? This is really an amalgamation of, like, every single little, like, fairy tale thing you've heard of, right?
Yeah.
That's what I think, though. It's what's interesting about this movie, but also I think holds it back a little bit, is that it tries to be the super amalgamation of every single fucking thing you've ever heard. That's why it's called legend, right?
Right.
It's because it's not just fairy tales. This is everything from King Arthur and freaking, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah.
And that honestly, it was a culmination because it was both Ridley Scott and William Hertzberg. This was like their opportunity. They had to get it out of their system. So every like fantasy fairy tale that was inside of them, this was their shot to get it out.
So they kind of
threw it all in there.
I guess when I think fairy tales, I think like, you know, Grimm, you know, kind of things where you have. Okay, so here's, I guess, my question. Mm-hmm. Fairy tales are usually like a story with some type of a moral, right? Mm-hmm. That's illustrated like so. Do you get that from legend, or is legend trying to be more of an adventure story? I mean,
yeah, it's kind of an adventure story. They're kind of having their cake and eating it too.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's the lesson of light over darkness.
I think the lesson is either trust or I don't even.
Fucking yeah, it's so meddled or muddled, right?
That's the problem with this movie in a weird way. Because like. Okay, to dive quickly into the story, I suppose, if we want to start talking directly about it. Now, I'm going to mention some additional scenes. These guys watched the theatrical cut, and I had to watch the director's cut just because I wanted to make sure when I say I don't like the director's cut, I was like, it's been like 15, 20 years since I saw the director's cut. I was like, bah, but then I saw it. I'm like, nah, yeah, I was right.
Okay, listeners, just so you know, I'm the guy who's in your corner. If you like the director's cut,
But so the Princess Lily.
Lily, played by Mia Sara.
Mia Sara.
Who you know from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yes, we know her from that. God. And I mean, right from the get, it's like this movie, like even in the 2-hour version I watch, man, they try to jam pack so much shit that it's like, so right in the first 5 minutes, you're supposed to understand like darkness is in his tower and he's just like, I must hide from the light. Oh, it hurts. And like, you know, we need to get the unicorn. And you see the awesome. I love the way the
Blix.
Little.
Blix.
Yeah, the head goblin. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Because, I mean, again, we have to mention Rob Bottin's work here because, like, he is this. I mean, I don't know if Tom Cruise or Ridley Scott are the stars. Like, Rob Bottin's work is just amazing in this movie. His sculpt work, on especially the Tim Curry character. He plays Lord of Darkness, but it's the devil. It's like one of the best realized devils I've ever seen.
I think it's the best, yeah.
It's absolutely the best, like when you got to think of it. And like the way Tim Curry plays it, just the way Tim Curry has like, I don't know, a seductive kind of like seductive mouth movement. So I have to say.
Yeah. Well, it's the only way the movie was recognized was that it was nominated for an Oscar for best makeup. Rob Bottin was. Mm. That's the only acknowledgement it got, basically.
And Bottin, for those of you who don't know, is the guy who did the Werewolves and the Howling. He did the Thing. I mean, like,
well, he got better.
I mean, he's done tons of stuff.
Yeah, he's worked on Star Wars. He's still working. He worked on Game of Thrones. Like, he's
Fight Club. He does, like, all the David Fincher stuff.
So right away, they tell you that the only way, like, we have to kill the unicorn so the sun will set forever, right? And
darkness will rule the land.
The only way to track it is innocence. Innocence.
Tim Curry just showed up with the. That was pretty good.
Darkness will like appear every once in a while.
I'm hoping,
dude. This is one of those movies that like the little acting I've tried to do or whatever. This is one of those movies I'm like, oh shit, that performance is amazing.
Yeah, because he's just going for broke.
It's evil.
I mean,
it is evil.
It's yeah, and he doesn't. It's one of those things where like he plays. Underneath all that fucking makeup. I mean, like, you got to imagine, like, this guy with this gigantic rack of
horns. It's all his mouth.
He's
like,
playing it.
He snarls and, like, there's a slight smile and shit.
Ridley Scott knew right on. He's like, I need someone who can play big. And he kept thinking of Tim Curry in Rocky Horror Picture Show. And he's like, that is the bravest performance. He's like, this guy's the only one that can do it as big as I want it.
Yeah. So and like, he scored again with the Pennywise and the Stephen King's lip thing. Yeah. I mean, he's got like three, you know, super memorable characters.
So automatically they show you a princess who, like, she may be innocent, but they're already showing a mischievous side to her, right?
Okay, now that may be, now see, this
is. No, because she still pulls the laundry line on her, like, fucking peasant friend.
Yeah, she's a princess, and, like, but she's
Blade and fairies.
Yeah. But didn't you get, I guess that's one
of the
So they're
trying to show you already that, like, an innocent person has a duality. An innocent human already has a duality in them. I mean, you could be innocent, but you're also always playing with it. It's like, maybe this is why, in a weird way, this movie never necessarily sat with me. Because I'm like, this chick's kind of,
but like, she's more that way in the director's cut, I think, than she is in.
But
because they cut out
that.
Like all the scenes between her and Tom Cruise when they first meet up in the forest. Because Tom Cruise plays
He's Jack of Fables. He's Jack of all fables. He's Jack and the Beanstalk. He's Jack and I don't know how many Jacks there. There's a lot of Jacks.
He is some type of woodland creature.
Yeah, he's the forest child.
Okay.
Which actually, Ridley Scott originally wanted him to be like green and like a lizard type.
Weird.
And William Hertzberg was like, so you want him to be a lizard boy? And he's like, yeah. And he goes, and he's going to woo a princess. Huh. He's like, right. Okay, fuck it. No, you're right.
I hear that story about Ridley Scott like all the goddamn time. He goes like, you know, when they're giving him ideas, Dan O'Bannon had a similar story about Alien where it was like, we're going to do this and they should be green. And like, but Ridley, what? You're right. Fuck it. No, we're not doing that. But he was just like, I was amazed that he was willing to go that far with ideas. I'll just take it as far as it'll go.
Lily is supposed to turn into a cat at the end when she's.
What?
Well, we're going to get there later.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's too much information. Overload.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
So Jack is a woodland nymph. No, that's not true.
He's just a dude. He just lives in the woods and he can like hear the wind.
He's a child of the forest.
Yeah. And the birds flock to him. And that. So he's one with nature. He's a nature boy. Okay.
Yeah, and like Lily. So Lily constantly.
Isn't
I hate that
Ric
we.
Flair's nickname.
Nature boy,
Ric Flair. I hate that we never see her village though, or her kingdom, or something like. Yeah. I think that's what's really missing from this fucking movie. Is like all this shit happens and it's like. What is everybody thinking about this? We only see a few frozen fucking peasants, and like we don't know what's going on with anything.
And we don't see the kingdom. She does mention that her father's house or something like that. In the director's cut, I think she's a princess. In the American cut, she's a lady. But she still refers to like her.
Yeah.
In my, you know, something she says something
some,
to Nell. Like you're as wealthy
of,
as I am.
She's some sort of aristocrat. That's all we know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're as wealthy as I am in knowledge or something. I can't remember.
You live a very rich life. Yeah. That's what she says.
Yeah. Which she's not that nice in the director's cut. In the director's cut,
she's a brat.
She just gets there. She's just like, I'm going to go see Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. Yeah. You know, she just.
But I think that is like where her character eventually goes. It's like that's what they're setting that up. Mm-hmm. Like exactly like, as you said, that duality. But they're
quickly trying to like get there in this movie. It's like in a weird way, because it's a fairy tale, it's almost like they don't want to build character. So they're quickly trying to get these archetypes out there, right? Mm-hmm. Woodland boy, you know, princess who's a little like mischievous. And then like they, you know, they go to the woods and you know, they're going to. Meet with a unicorn.
It's all like we would say it's plot based, right? It's all events strung together more than it is characters leading you there. I mean, like even watching it this time, and I'm not dogging on the movie because I do like this movie. I'm saying it right now to cover what I'm about to say. But I was watching it going like Tom Cruise is just kind of like he doesn't like lead the action. I mean, I suppose that's what his character's arc is, right? Like by the end, I'm actually going to pick up the sword and go do something. He'll do
anything for this princess girl. He's kind of pathetic.
Right. He's
throws a ring off a thing and he's just like,
yeah, but it's because he's innocent.
Sorry.
I think that's maybe the thing. Yeah, he's the innocent.
He's the innocent. Yeah. Not her.
Oh, yeah. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's what lures the unicorn.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah,
okay. He's one with nature. He doesn't understand like material things, but she does. She likes material things. She comes from this wealthy world. He's the innocence. He's the purity.
Let me ask if this happened in the theatrical cut. So the goblins, the goblins are following her, right? The goblins are following the Princess Lily.
As far as we can tell, they show up where the unicorns are somehow.
And this is why I think they had to cut a little bit of this movie back a little bit because, like in that scene. They try to build like a something, you know, the goblins are hunting Lily and she can't, you know, she's just calling for Jack, right? Like, please answer me. And it's just like, where the emotion comes from in this movie, really like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then sometimes she'll get scared. And then the atmosphere is affected. It's like, what the fuck is going on? This movie's a little insane. And I know it's because it's after
they poison. They poison the unicorn with a dart.
Yeah,
and then the thunder rolls in and all that.
But it's right with with her heightening of tension because Jack jumps in after the ring and you know. But then all of a sudden, it's just like this is a little too. And another thing for this movie, I don't care which version you're watching, the fucking shit is busy. The screen is so busy with just like. Put everything in the screen. We'll have like pollen and fucking like just pollen
and rose petals and
shit just flying everywhere, bubbles, dude.
Glitter,
dude. Yeah. Glitter. Over everyone's face. There's a little too much in this movie. We're like, holy there fuck! Is. They needed to pull back a little bit because it's so. Well,
maybe
busy.
It was a new thing in the
maybe.
There's
maybe
glitter rock and glitter.
I'm sure
movies.
It was so expensive.
I love it.
Well, let me
ask you
this.
I don't like glitter on
her
face, but like the scene where I'll get to that. But the scene where he like picks up the sword, his whole hand, his whole hand is glittery.
Yeah, his
it's
whole
like,
face
why?
Is all glittery in that scene.
Is he fairy magic?
It's because it's everywhere. He's gonna get it on it.
But see, I wonder if that is actually what Ridley Scott was thinking. Glitter is magic.
Glitter
is in
magic.
This movie.
Yeah, they would take these ordinary things, and Ridley Scott would look at it, and he'd be like, "Add some glitter." Like that was his whole
add
thing.
Glitter.
Yeah.
He was like a
yeah.
All right, Holly, before we go any further, I have to ask this question because I've asked this question of myself many, many a year, never have come up with a good answer. Mm-hmm. What is it with women and unicorns? The appeal.
You know?
They want to think they're pure.
Every girl loves
girls want to
unicorns.
Think that they're pure.
I love them.
Well, I'm a dude. I like unicorns, but that's because I saw the last unicorn. And unicorns can fight with their horns.
So it's a warrior thing. They've got a horn. They can gore you with it.
Maybe.
What's the female appeal? I'm sure that's not the same
thing. I don't know. Maybe it's the whole, like, what you can't have kind of thing. I don't know. I honestly, like, I like
well,
this
we can
movie.
Come
it's
back
just,
to
a cool,
it if
it's
you
just a cool mythical creature.
I like this movie and there was unicorns and, like, Lisa Frank shit that I had when I was a kid. But other than that, I've never been like, unicorns. Like, I need them.
Have you seen my unicorn phone or something? You know, my unicorn lamp, my unicorn. Yeah. I'm sure there's people out there like that.
I might have had, like, a unicorn folder in, like, second grade. But it's never been, like, a thing for me. I don't know.
Hmm. Well, I guess also before we go on,
although
we
did should, like My Little Ponies.
See, there's something. Well, everybody, every girl wants a pony, I guess. Yeah. So this is a special pony. But the reason that there are two versions of this movie that we're kind of jumping back, we're talking about Legend, the whole experience. Yeah. I guess.
The Legend experience.
It's the way
experience.
That we, or the way that I understand it, you'll correct me where I'm wrong. Ridley Scott shot, you know, this movie. It was released internationally as 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And when they screened it for an American audience, Ridley Scott became very insecure because
there was a couple hooligans in the audience that were a little stoned.
And they were snickering at the movie.
And they were making comments and snickering during the movie. And he got really insecure.
But everybody does that. Dude, my ex-wife, I showed this to her and she's like, it's a fairy movie. I'm like, oh, I like it.
Yeah.
So there's lots of people. Some people just can't jive with the fairy tale shit. Some people are just like, nope, if it's not orcs and dragons mm-hmm. and like fucking wood elves and bone arrows.
But
they
I
don't
wonder
want nothing
if
to do
maybe
with
that's part of the thing. Like, I mean,
that's why I like it is because it's fairies.
But the whole fairy tale thing, I mean, you've got an English director. I don't know what nationality Horsburgh is, but like that's
is.
Exactly.
That's what
part
is.
Of their mythology.
That is their
so
shit.
It would play there.
But I can see why, because I do fucking think the theatrical version, it just scenes are longer. They repeat a lot of shit in the director's cut. Like, dude,
I know they repeat
darkness is
speech.
Always telling you, like, it's like we know darkness. Like, I actually think the theatrical cut allows the viewer to be a little smarter. It does. It allows you to watch the movie and take in what it means. Where the theatrical cut, everybody's just constantly telling you, like, this is what this is in a fairy tale. You know, it's like, fuck.
I guess we were on the other side. Yeah. Well, at least I was. When we were sitting here, and like at the beginning of the theatrical cut, there's a crawl.
There's
like
a crawl.
That explains the movie
but that
to
was
you,
explained
you dumb in, Americans.
But in the director's cut, it was explained that way, but with a voiceover of darkness.
And that was his voiceover from later in the movie. That's what he says.
No, well, yeah.
It was like verbatim the same lines.
But,
like,
but I'm saying in the director's cut, he explained not just that part later. He also explained it in the beginning that, like, dark, I must wait in the dark. So it's like, fuck it. Do it with a crawl. Because that's what I like about this version. I don't like that you have to wait to see darkness. Because why? If he's fucking talking and he's doing the Power Ranger thing where he's in the back of the chair and you see his arm. It's like, fuck it. Just show the motherfucker. Why do I got to, like, see his arm?
Okay. So
I
guess
it's an hour later till you see the motherfucker. Oh, but it doesn't build any suspense. I'm telling you, really, Scott misses the mark on every like emotional beat I think he's trying to make in this movie, and that's why this movie needed to be like, we gotta cut a fucking half an hour out of this, Rid.
Well, see, I guess I was on the other, here's the other side of this, like, because I saw Legend, you know, on whatever, VHS or something, the theatrical cut, and didn't really like it. This is back in like 86, 87, whatever. And so it comes out on DVD and this like director's cut, and like everybody's talking about how this movie's awesome, and I'm like, maybe I should give this a second shot. So it's back in the day when you had to buy shit to actually see it.
Yeah.
And I watched the director's cut, and I mean, obviously they've given away the design of darkness in the advertising materials. You've seen what he's going to look like, but watching the movie, I mean, basically it was almost like a first time go through it again, that they don't show him up front leads us to like, well, what the fuck does he look like? What's he like? And then he shows up as like a phantom or something.
A weird point. A
hooded figure,
in which the woods to talk
to
his minions.
It. You can't make out what it is.
You can see it better in the Blu-ray, but you still, I don't know what it is. It's got just, like,
I don't even know what it's supposed
lumps
to be.
All over its face. It's not articulated. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's like,
and so then you're
like a wraith, a dark wraith. Or
you're like, it's that darkness? It's this big dark shape. And so when he comes out of the fucking mirror later on, it was like, oh shit. It to me that time, I think it worked the way that it was, you know, the original intention. It was like, oh fuck. Because the music by Jerry Goldsmith was like on point. And that's why I missed that when I watched the theatrical cut where they replaced the music with the Tangerine Dream.
That's awesome. I love that.
Music. Woo! Boop, boop, boop,
it plays
boop,
the same theme over and over and over
again. It's awesome. It's just awesome. It works.
Tangerine Dream was a German, a pop synth group?
Dude, they're still doing shit today. I think they just did a song for Grand Theft Auto 5.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, in the
they're
80s,
awesome. I
in
do
this
like
era,
them. They're one of my favorite like synth bands.
Especially,
I guess
it seemed
it.
Like they got like popular doing a lot of soundtracks.
They did.
Like, I never heard an album by them. I know they have them, but
yeah,
it
they
was
were
all,
mainly soundtracks.
Sorcerer was a big one for them. Firestarter, Near Dark. There's a big one that I'm missing. That'll come to me. Tangerine Dream. Anyway.
But yeah, the theatrical, the director's cut was scored by Jerry Goldsmith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
full orchestra.
Full orchestra.
It was so angelic. It was ridiculous. It didn't fit the movie. But it was in a weird way, it doesn't fit the movie.
It was big, kind of like classical, I guess.
But I think, I don't know, just being in the 80s, I think the Tangerine Dream, it fits the fantasy. I don't know why. I don't know why, because I think fantasy music did get entwined somehow. You know, like, I don't know. Fantasy music got entwined. If you're talking about, I mean, yeah, this isn't the music I'm obviously talking about, but just to give you a frame of reference. You know, shit like the Iron Maidens and the Rainbows and the Rushes. It's like music about a lot of the progressive rock, a lot of the, you know, they had a lot of fantasy-based music. So I just think our image of fantasy with music just really had a, I don't know. It just had a, you know, yeah. Like, I mean, that's why I love it. I just love Legend. Like I said, just that. It's awesome.
You love that pan flute.
It's great. It is fucking great. It's probably even a keyboard. It's just a keyboard. Yeah. It's not yeah. It's a synthesizer.
It's like two guys with a keyboard,
it's
right?
A synthesizer. Or something like that. Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. But it's one of my favorite synthesizer scores, yeah. Which you can listen to the whole hour 33 minutes of it on YouTube. It's great. It's fantastic. So the goblins steal the
alicorn. What do they call it? The unicorn's horn.
Yeah,
they just call it
alicorn.
I can't recall
it's something it. Like that. Something we have to like get that, the alicorn yeah. back. Yeah,
but you know, so what? The goblin. Where are we? I mean, Lily sees her. Everything turns to ice, right? Everything's frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it becomes
time.
Jack's
and for some reason,
to retrieve
Lily
the
just runs away. Like, Jack's stuck under the pond. And she's like, fuck this, it's cold. Like, I'm going inside.
She's selfish.
She is selfish.
Yeah, that's her thing.
I hate this girl. Yeah. I do. This, watching it this time, I'm like, fuck, I can't get behind her. I hate her.
Well,
she's
okay,
what I
but,
fear. This
but
is what
to be fair, that I think that comes across stronger in the version you watched.
It still came across.
Because that does,
I'm
that
just saying, no, I'm just saying it still came across in this. Because there's still things that, because I, once again, I think this is kind of bad Ridley filmmaking in a weird way. Like, he just doesn't explain some of his character's motivations. They're so worried about getting to the next part, mm-hmm. the next part, that motivations are kind of thrown out the window a little bit.
It's very light on characterization, I think. Yeah. But that's a review for later. Okay, so Jack has to get the unicorn horn back, and to do it or help him in his quest, he's teamed up with Gump, which is like a little pan.
He's like a pan fairy guy. Yeah. He was like a little kid or something with a weird voice. I've never liked that. Voice.
The guy, the real guy is a German actor.
Yeah,
she touched her. Oh,
yeah.
I hate his voice.
Yeah, he's 19.
He was 19?
He's 19.
Holy
and he
shit.
Was German. But the entire movie is dubbed. The entire
yeah.
movie.
Oh, yeah,
so
for sure.
They had someone else doing the voice.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
Well, they said it was because when they're filming on the, because most of it is filmed in the forest, which, by the way, we even talked about. The forest in this movie is fake.
It's all set. Yeah.
It's all on a soundstage. The 007 soundstage in England.
007, the largest soundstage where Superman was filmed and James Bond.
This forest is amazing because they built these huge fake trees and then put actual vegetation and actual animals in the stage.
Oh, yeah,
it looks
fucking crazy.
Yeah, they said with the water, they'd mist it down, but the heat from the lights would actually make like this kind of fog.
Yeah,
you know, mist.
That's what I do like about this movie. I like how everything. I don't know. This movie's so weird. There's some images in this movie that are fucking phenomenal looking, dude. Like when
when
Jack is apologizing to the unicorn and there's
that
white light that's shining from it's like oh my god
with
it's
those
angelic.
Red petals and
it's
all
angelic.
That stuff on the unicorn so,
there's just the a weird softness to
this movie's
it's beautiful but so when Gump meets him,
There's Gump.
There's too many bubbles in that scene.
They got a bubble.
I don't know why there's a bubble. That's why I'm like, you guys have lost your fucking mind. Bubbles. What does that signify?
Again,
is that the fairy? It is fairy.
Again, that's Ridley Scott.
That means there's a fairy there.
He looked at this scene and he was like, "What will make this more magical?"
Bubbles.
He's like, "Bubbles."
I really think, but it was so fucking like, what the. Fuck,
it's like the Lawrence Welk bubble machine. You guys don't remember.
And I do
that,
actually, like, I used to.
Who Lawrence Welk is.
I used to hate the Gump riddle scene that was in the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
I used to not like it, but now I like it because it's so reminiscent of old fairy tales. Because they're basically going to, like, basically kind of kill Jack, yeah. right? Because they're like, hey, didn't you do something? Did you see anything yeah. in the woods today? I mean, it's all snow now.
Yeah.
But they're going to kind of like fucking punish him. But then he's like, you know, ah, I challenge yeah, you to a riddle.
That's how you do it, right? You challenge yeah. him to a riddle.
And immortal people. And to me, these questions three. Like, it's very, yeah.
And everything rhymes. And everybody even, speaks like, in rhyme.
He fucking like flips cool. out when Jack guesses it. Just because yeah. I guess if you're an immortal or something, you just take that really personally. Something you can like, you just gotta, no.
Yeah.
But then they just skip to the whole, like, drink. But I do like that scene a little bit more in the director's cut. Just that yeah. scene.
Because it adds a sense of consequences, I guess. And the other one, in the theatrical cut, it's like, well, I did it out of love. Oh, well, love then is a whole different
let's
thing.
Drink
you
to
can
that.
Ruin
drink.
The whole fucking world. Well, let's drink to love.
Let's
like,
drink
what?
To love.
Yeah.
Oh, what? But I love that one of Brown Tom is played by Billy Barty. Who was... Yeah. Gwildor from Masters of the Universe, dude. And he's awesome.
I love Billy Barty.
He's like one of the funniest guys in the movie. Like, yeah. all these little people are yeah. really
Screwball?
Funny.
Screwball? Is that the Screwball. Other one? Screwball and Brown Town, right.
Yeah.
Was Screwball the guy with the jug of, yeah. Oh my yeah. God,
under
like.
Under his hat.
Lily, you saw Lily? She was alive when they killed me. just that nod. He's like, dude, that is comedic genius right there.
That's yeah. great.
Dude. So. For like this is why I'm like, what will Lily the for some dumb reason, unexplained reason, once again, just to drive the plot forward, the goblins show up to the peasant like Lily's hiding in the peasant's house that she visited, and the goblins go there. For I don't know.
Well, because that represents just, the human world, I think.
They were just kind of ransacking the place.
Yeah.
But I, to them.
Were, but they didn't really take any. That's just they, how well, you were showing yeah. the power of the unicorn horn yeah. have, making the fire bigger.
You saw
bigger.
Them like they were kind of like messing with stuff on the table, like trying to take the food, and they were just kind of ransacking the place.
She is so sweet. I could eat her brains like jam. I love that line, dude.
Yeah.
And then she's just like. Well, this is my fault. I have to go follow them.
I'll make this right.
Yeah
but she does right. end up being, yeah, that's right, because she goes back and with Brown Tom, she ends up getting abducted, I guess, and taken to Darkness's mm-hmm. tree of whatever the fuck, yeah, it was like the evil, the world tree or the evil tree or something.
Yeah, because
like
she follows them to the other unicorn where the
yeah,
unicorn
left,
is there with the dying one.
Jack and Gump decided that he needed to be the
You'll
champion
be the
to
hero.
Fix it. So they're gone getting him some armor. They leave Brown Tom to watch the unicorn, and that's when Lily shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the point of that being that Jack will...
He'll just become a hero?
Yeah, and he's going to go on the quest, right? The yeah. hero's quest.
We need a
quest.
Guy to go on a quest, so we just have to do this.
And Lily's going to end up, you know, in somehow of her own volition, becomes like the prisoner of
Well, no, the goblins
dark.
Go
the
there
goblins
to, like...
Yeah,
because they're like, you can't just kill... There's like, there's another dumb unicorn out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, as
you
long
have
as
to
there's
get the
one...
Other, the sun will set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some will rise again and...
So they show up
daylight
to get the other
is my destroyer.
Well, that's he makes my that best. Very, makes
Tim
that
Curry is
very...
not as good as you should do it.
There's just a.
Yeah.
There's only a few ones I have.
I'm sure they're coming up.
Yeah, they'll come. Once I get to the scene, I'll be like, ooh.
All right. So, I mean, like, it follows the. I guess that's the thing. We rush through, it feels like, a lot of fantasy set pieces, which is my problem even with, like, the Hobbit movies now. It's like you have these scenes that are pretty much self-contained. You could cut any one of them almost. And you wouldn't miss it in the movie.
Uh-huh.
In the director's cut, is there the scene where was it they got attacked by like all those the tree people or what are they zombies or the
oh that's when they get to the giant tree and they're Jack and Gump are going through the palace, Darkness's palace.
Yeah, right? There was like a brief scene where these guys jumped out at him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't remember this scene at all. It is either like one of those things
I just
where
watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jack and Gump are looking for Lily in the palace, and they go through this corridor, and there's all these, like, weird, like, they sound like cats, like animalistic zombie-looking things.
People like long, straggly hair, and they jump out at them, and they end up boarding up a door or something, running down a hallway.
This is crazy, yeah. I just watched this.
It's
what I'm saying.
It's 25 seconds.
Inconsequential. Yeah. You could just cut it out.
Because even, like, okay, because they even want you to feel things that you shouldn't feel, like, just because they want you to feel them. Like, when, like, we can... jump back but like when they get to the Darkness palace where fuck like all they do is like they go through the swamp and then they just fall into the dungeon. It's like what the fuck. just because we got to be trapped in a dungeon, like nothing kidnapped them. They didn't get caught. Yeah. They get because yeah. if you got caught, that would alarm darkness. Yeah. And we don't want to do that yet because we're hiding him.
Yeah.
Telling you,
it is kind of amazing.
It's like, oh god,
they fall down a hole in the swamp and end up in a cage.
In the dungeon. We didn't even get to the swamp.
Yeah, that's why it's like we can go back because I just wanted to get to that whole like they just want you to get into situations like the whole like we need armor. There's a like magical cave of gold armor and shit that is impenetrable. There's a shield. It's like okay, this is your Clash of the Titans like. Perseus getting, like, the gifts from the gods in a weird way.
Jack's armor, by the way, which I told Colin about, is the cheapest thing from this movie because all it is hammered down bottle caps.
It does look cool.
It's awesome.
I like his armor.
Yeah. And we meet the other character, Una, who's in his party, who's a little, like, forest sprite or something.
She's a sprite.
She's the Tinkerbell kind of affair.
Because she has to love him.
Yeah. Unrequited. Like,
yeah.
I'm not really sure where that was going, but we meet.
Is that just like a Peter Pan reference? Like maybe. Fairies that like the dude and like are jealous of the other girl that he's trying to protect in a weird way.
Yeah, it was a nod to Peter Pan.
Yeah, in a weird way, she's like a seductive. He loves Lily, but she's like a seductive, like sexual thing that he could easily, you know. And I like how she's always because she don't give a fuck. This is what I love about Immortals. It's like they don't give a fuck about humans. She's just like, hey, dude, fuck this darkness shit, dude. I'll love you. Well, she doesn't say that, but you know, that's the gist in a weird way. Like, you know, a fairy's love is the. Well, what does she say? Doesn't she say a fairy's love is something that's like I can't about fucking
fairy
remember.
Hearts or something?
No, well, she says fairy. Yeah,
because human hearts don't work
brittle
that way.
Like porridge, or like a fairy heart beats wild, and but she says something about how a human could do anything with a fairy's love or some shit like that. She just says something like that. She makes a reference.
She says that she could be anything you want her to be or something like that. Because,
like, the impish people in this are weird.
There's a darkness to her character that's kind of, you know, I mean, like, she goes on this thing and it's like, okay, so this is like a band of misfit friends, right?
It's The Hobbit, right? You got to get together a bunch of dwarves and, like, go on the quest.
Right.
That's what you do.
And you have your magic, like, so she's their Merlin or their Gandalf or something, right?
Because she's just like Gump's like sprite friend. I don't know, whatever.
I think it's Tinkerbell.
But in that scene, I guess where they're imprisoned and she's the only one who can, you know, fly through the doors to go get the key. There's that, and she comes back and she's basically, you know, like Travis said, it's like, you know, you can love me, and she gets upset in a way that's like, man, this is like kind of dangerous. Like, she's going to fuck him over. Well, like, why is she, you know, attempting to seduce this guy by blatantly, you know, becoming
being a
Lily.
Fairy, man, just being a sprite, dude. They're not nice things.
Yeah, but it's like I get that they're trying to give some kind of a character moment to the character, right? To define her in some way. But it comes off as like, you're this little fairy sprite, but now you're like mean in some way. Didn't it read as mean to you? That scene?
Well, see, I don't see that as mean. I just see that as, I don't know. I've always thought of the fairy world in that way.
Just impersonal.
Right?
It's alien.
Human. Yeah, they don't have emotions. Come from the idea that we turn to dust. You know, if we lived forever, fuck it. Fuck anything. Yeah. Like, whatever.
And we were talking earlier, like, in Europe, they actually have this folklore. And fairy folklore, they're very mischievous. They're kind of mean.
They were the aliens. Okay. Yeah. They were the aliens of the day.
They're very
like,
mischievous.
Aliens come addicted to hillbillies. Fairies came and abducted, like, Irish people or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess. All right.
What's that? Oh, I can't. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I just think that's like a trial for Jack, right? It's a, you know.
Yep. In the hero's journey.
Yeah. Because.
Right. He has to remain
about,
true and pure because he's innocent.
There you go.
That's where it was.
Because it's all about like, because I mean, all he has to do is break away from Lily, right? In this whole movie. Because like.
Well, depending on the version that you saw.
Well, but no, the end is, dude, the director's cut is mostly the first hour. It's just once they get to the freaking darknesses thing, it seems pretty, like, by the books. It seems pretty, except for the introduction of darkness.
Yeah, but the ending, like, I mean, I guess you're saying that his goal is, like, he needs to get away from Lily in the theatrical version.
Well, because Gump's always just like, ah, fuck her. We just got to get the unicorn horn. You know, you don't care about Lily, too.
Yeah, but in the theatrical cut, I guess this is the biggest change to me that I see that the two versions present is in the theatrical cut, you get the idea that Lily is heading out into the woods to meet her boyfriend, Jack. You never really feel that he's a magical creature in the theatrical cut because there's an implied love scene, and then they play with the birds afterwards.
Well, I don't think he's magical. He's just a wood dude.
Well, I know, but he talks with fucking
that's
nature.
Just wood shit. He's teaching her how to do it. Anybody can do it. You just got to live in the fucking woods since you were a kid.
Like
he's Mowgli.
Caesar the dog whisperer.
He's Mowgli or Tarzan, right?
But as her boyfriend, they're in love. So that's what motivates him to go after her. And at the end, they both run off into the sunset and wave back at everybody else. Where in the director's cut, Jack returns, it's another day for Jack. At the end of the day, because he's not like her, he ends up running. He's not human like she is. He runs off to the sunset and waves bye-bye by himself. Am I right?
Well, he's human.
That's not what I got.
He's human.
From
he's just a. He just belongs. That's not, you know, the.
Well, he's
his
not,
world
I guess,
is in the woods.
His world is, yeah. So he returns to his world.
Yeah.
But she's going to go back to her. At the end of the day, she's still a princess.
Yeah.
Eventually, she's going to get married off.
But the
theatrical. Some political deal by her parents.
Yeah, because he just knows that it's like, we don't belong in the same world. Yeah. I mean, he learns that from this, right?
Yeah.
Takes her to the unicorn.
Yeah, but in the theatrical cut, that doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
In the theatrical cut, at the end, they get reunited, and they make out, and then they go running off into the.
There's just too much story.
Is your love strong enough?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love the set designs of the Darkness's Palace. Those huge monolithic freaking,
huge
columns.
Pillars.
Oh, yeah.
Or, oh, my God. It's amazing.
I'm wondering if we can back up just a little bit and talk briefly about Meg Muckle.
Yes. Played by
Robert Picardo.
Robert Picardo.
The doctor from Star Trek. And also, Star Trek, what was it?
I was blown away when I heard that. Or when I saw the documentary.
Well, he was also.
DVDs, and I was like, that fucking guy. Oh, indeed I do.
But he had to have got the part because he also schlepped all that Rob Bottin makeup in
for the
Howling.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. He was Eddie.
Fantastic. Meg Mucklebones is my favorite.
She's a swamp creature.
She's a witch.
Yeah.
She's just a witch that eats boys. You have to be. You have
she's like
to,
the swamp witch.
If you're in a fairy tale legend movie, you got to come across the witch that's going to eat you.
A swamp witch.
Know, a plump boy.
Yeah. Fantastic green hook
super
nose.
Super green,
oh,
dude.
Yeah.
Like
fantastic.
Kermit green. That's what I like about her.
And then in the theatrical cut, they go and cut all her scenes out. Okay. So in the director's cut.
It's a much shorter scene in theatrical cut.
In the theatrical cut, she pops up. She says, what do we have here? Little boy or something like that. And then she says, oh, indeed I do. Yeah. Comes down and he cuts her head off.
It's very short.
But in the director's cut.
Me, oh,
yeah.
Oh, indeed I do.
Yeah, but once again, dude, everything that they cut out is just extended scene.
Yeah,
why have her in there if not to give her a scene?
Because,
what are you saying? Sorry.
No, I was saying. Everything else, they cut a lot of the dialogue with Lily and Jack in the beginning, and I'm okay with that. They cut a lot of extended scenes. They cut the fairy dance scene.
Oh.
But Meg Mucklebones deserves a long scene.
Yeah, because
she's
sorry, dude.
Awesome.
I'd rather have Tangerine Dream than Mia Sarah. I mean, the first, 10 minutes of this
singing?
Movie is like a musical.
I'm
a princess.
I don't need
it's like, fuck it.
I don't need to see her singing. But I could use a little more Meg.
It was all right.
She's
that
awesome.
Scene's okay. The whole, because he, kind of woos her. You know, mm-hmm. He tries to, well,
like
someone as fair as you. And she's, looking in the
reflection.
In
the
reflection.
Yeah. Because that's a fairy tale staple, I think, that you use your wiles to trick the creature. And then
which is something that Lily does later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lily is prisoner of darkness.
Yes.
Well, I want to talk about how darkness, because this is something where I will disagree that I love darkness in the theatrical cut and not the director's cut because, you may see his face, but it's just kind of like in the beginning of the theatrical cut, you may see his face, but it's really close up and it's got the black light thing with the green eyes and all that jazz, right? But I love how in the theatrical cut, when he comes to the mirror, it's just his hand, then his hoof, and then she faints, and then there's what's the word I'm looking for? There's something in the way of the camera. Not something in the way, but the camera.
There's a distortion on the lens.
There's kind of something, and I
So you don't see his face. He's coming through.
He's still kind of coming through.
Awesome.
And I love the reveal in the theatrical version because that's more epic to me. Because once, even when you see him, it's a little distorted until he like comes up on her. Then just that scene where the wind blows his like hate back. Yeah, it's like, holy fuck, dude. He like, yeah, dude, that's like, oh my God. And I've always loved the scene where Lily comes across the like, well, the whole like woo.
Yeah.
Is that voice different in the
No, TV? I checked it. Okay. I checked YouTube because I thought it was really higher in the and I was like, this is driving me crazy.
Yeah, when I'm watching, I'm like, I remember that being different.
Yeah, I thought
make her one of us.
Yeah.
But there's the dancing like shadow version. Well, yeah, I
like,
love
the
it
dancing
because
dress,
once again, this is like
that.
kind of a metaphysical thing, yeah. Right? Those are her like dark intentions or something creeping up on her because she like saw the necklace and she
eventually embraces it and becomes like this goth version.
Oh, dude,
of
just that, just the scene when she like puts her arms out to it, you know, it's like holy fuck, you know. But
she's like, you actually see her giving in, like it's so cool.
But the problem I have with the director's cut. That I love about the in the director's cut, you could kind of tell automatically she's playing. Like I believed, like oh my God, she turned. When you watch the theatrical cut, it seems like she turns more. Where if you watch the director's cut, you're always a little aware that she's just kind of like biding time with darkness. Where I kind of believe a little bit in the theatrical cut that like oh dude, she might be a little fucked, you know, like she might be going like the dark side here. I love that goddamn dress, dude.
Yeah, well,
all split all the way below the fucking belly button.
Yeah, she was 15. Calm down.
Whatever. I didn't put the dress on her. I'm just saying dress is amazing. I said nothing about who was wearing the dress.
I'm just kidding.
Darkness has put this dress on her in an effort to make her his bride,
it's
because that's what they
dress.
Do, right? I mean, like, there's only one woman in the world for both Jack and Darkness.
Yes.
And Darkness wants her to become his, so, like, just sit and talk with me for a little while in this goofy living chair, which isn't in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, the goofy. Fuck, what's that? What's that line? He goes, "I value your thoughts."
It's a pretty good seduction scene. It's the best scene that he has in the movie, and where you get like the full force of the Tim Curry performance.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, in that scene, he makes it.
Which they said that. From horn to hoof, he stood at 13 feet tall.
13 feet tall. He had to be walking around in lifts because he's so
he was. He was on stilts. Yeah.
But it culminates in a scene that I thought was maybe, again, I watched the theatrical cut, so I'm not sure, you know, my memory on the director's cut, but she's like, no, I'll never give in to you. I'll never, you know, whatever. And then he throws a fit, knocks all the shit off the table, and she laughs and runs away. Mm-hmm. And she says, there's nothing that, you know, I want more than basically there's a throat that needs to be cut.
Yeah.
The unicorn. And he has that laugh where it's like, I can't even do it. It was like, wow, he's really getting off on this. And did that play any, was there like a,
that played the same.
So it was abrupt. Like she was 1 minute, no, I'll never give in with you or give in to you. And then the next minute.
Yeah. Cause like, she's just being all pixie. Like she does the same thing with Jack. Right. I mean, she acts the same way with Jack.
And I think the director's cut, if I remember, puts all the seduction scenes together. Isn't it one big seduction scene? Because the theatrical cut, it's broken up where they have to go and get the plates to bring the sunlight down through these mirrors that they're going to bounce
down. It's
kind
of cut up. As far as I remember, it's a little
because I remember Una, like, looking through the wall.
Looking through the door.
And saying, like, she's gone over to the dark side. And I don't think that was in the theatrical. Because they weren't there at that point. They were off gathering plates from the pig-headed dudes. Pig face. The butchers.
Yeah, but Una. They split up in teams, though.
Yeah, Una was there.
Yeah, Una.
Okay.
They show her with her really blue eye.
Yeah.
Really?
I thought there was a moment when they were looking in at overhearing this conversation where they thought like Lily has gone over to the darkness. In the theatrical cut, it seemed only at the end when Gump and Jack have a viewpoint and they're, you know, they're going to sacrifice the unicorn and Lily's there and they've got bow and arrow on them that he's like, you know, Gump says to Jack that she has actually, she is one of them at this point. You got to shoot her.
Yeah.
And I believe it too. I did.
I think in the director's cut, they set that up earlier though, where they're like, you know, we see that she's being tempted. She's going over to, it's not a big deal.
I mean, I like the time, I like the time, what's the word I'm looking for? The what they use for like three beats of a blue bird's heart or something like
yeah.
three.
They've got like a clear globe with some fluid in it, but somehow it's doing like, yeah.
That was weird when they're like, let's synchronize. I'm like, they're synchronizing watches? What is this? Like, what are we watching here? But yeah, like one of the dwarves whips out like a hand watch and then yeah, Gump just has a weird like,
like
whatever.
It says something about
three beats of whatever.
Yeah, something. Finch's tail or whatever. Something, it was something like that. Whippoorwills.
And they do like a wag of this thing's tail. And it's like, I like the time in this.
Fantasy
it's
stuff.
All done in, it's all done in like nature time, right?
Yeah. So, but I guess that brings us to Jack.
The end of Alien.
Two.
I mean,
We got to blast
for some reason,
out
there's
the
a
void.
Stargate. It's like, why does darkness need a stargate?
That's to the other,
to the
that's
space.
To the void. The void, man.
To space.
That's where his father is, in the void.
Is he?
Yeah.
Space is darkness, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Space is space cold, but that's just stupid. But I just thought it was stupid. It's like, what? The
so
top
he's
of
like,
this place is a stargate to space?
He's literal darkness, but also figurative darkness, as in, like,
he's
there
the
can be
of...
no you without me. We are brothers. We are split apart.
Eternal brother.
Yeah. Then I am always a part of you. Like, even if you kill him, basically, darkness will still live in some part of the human heart.
Yeah.
In Jack, though, I don't see it because he's, like, you know, innocence personified. But there's a big fight scene.
Oh, yeah.
It's not bad. There's people swinging across. That's actually the one part where I didn't like Botine's makeup job on Darkness, because I think there's a stunt head that they incorporate so the guy can actually run.
He can actually run, yeah.
And when he runs, it's weighted different and it's bobbing, and the Darkness face is frozen in one expression and can't move. It's like, yeah.
Good line, though. What do we hear? A little boy. I love that line, dude.
Yeah.
Everything about it. But father, protect me.
Yeah. Who's his father?
Getting sucked out the fucking airlock.
The devil.
Like the devil gets sucked out the airlock. Ugh, fucking Ridley, dude.
It is. He's literally right. It is the end of it. All over again. Blast the guy out into space. But I guess the point of the scene, the dramatic heft of it, is that Jack chooses to, in the moment, like Lily looks like she's going to kill this fucking unicorn and join Darkness. And he's given a choice where he can either shoot her dead
or not. What's the cool line she says when she's like
I am the sister to the something.
She says something about like, I don't know. God damn,
yeah,
I can't
sister
remember.
To the
it was a cool line, though. It was totally wicked.
Yeah. Their costume is very fetching at that. I don't know. I guess something for goth chicks. I don't know.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Super awesome.
Yeah. So he makes the choice to spare her. And sure enough, Lily has not gone over to the dark side. She cuts the bond of the unicorn and tells it to run free. And then they all go after Darkness and blast him out the goddamn airlock. And then everybody regroups
with
in the forest.
Sun. The sun. They hit like a mirror, like, which I don't think that can work. I don't think that's science.
Yeah, I don't think light blasts through doors.
Well, I don't think it like even bounces off of mirrors like that crazy way. It just doesn't do that. But they had to get sunlight in there to kill them.
Yeah.
The reflective properties. I mean, it would, just not that strong.
Not enough to blast a couple of doors.
No.
But it's a good visual effect. I kind of appreciated that. So, yeah. Crap, there was something else I was going to say about either fantasy movies or Legend itself. By the time we wrap this movie up, because everybody has then regrouped in the forest, Jack and Lily make out.
He dives in. He gets a ring
that
she threw in earlier in the movie.
Which was a challenge to who I'm going to marry whoever finds this ring.
Yes.
The world is reset.
Yes.
Nell is apparently back to normal. Do we see Nell in the finale?
No.
You don't see her husband, husband, in the theatrical cut.
Who cares about him? You only see him, like, what, frozen in the house, right?
He's, like, passed out. He's passed out.
Yeah, he's passed out.
It just gives the impression that Nell isn't living there by herself.
Right.
You know, she's got a kid and a husband. It's like there's a cluster of people.
Yeah,
in
there's
this little,
a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the director's cut, I kind of like her little speech where she says, like, well, today was fun. You know, like, this was just another day in this world, right? Like, can I visit you tomorrow? You know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, if it's a fairy tale, has either one of these characters, I mean, now if we're saying that Jack is the innocent one who may be the central character of the story, or Lily, the human, you know, okay, I'll stop saying that. She's the, okay, human. Where we're the materialistic person. I was going to say human. Can't stop it. I'm thinking everybody else is magical except for her.
She is what darkness was talking about. There's a piece of me in all of you, la, 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 la. That's her. You know, she's got that in her.
So after everything's all wrapped up, what was the lesson learned by these folks, by our fairy tale?
You saw an awesome movie with unicorns and the devil.
Oh, that's not good, though.
There was not a moral to this movie. Not that I could assess that. It was just a love movie that had things from fairy tales and legends. That's it. Really, like,
Style over substance.
I think so, but I've always felt that about Ridley Scott a little bit.
He's gotten better, I think.
Not lately.
Prometheus
maybe was just Blade Runner. He just rehashes shit he used to do. And like, whatever. It's new.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Because I remember Prometheus thinking that he was going to go after this bigger idea, like a science fiction-y idea. Yeah. And then it turns into like a squiddy, you know, monster movie. Huh. And they just kind of left all that behind. I'm like, eh, well, all right. You have anything else to say about Legend?
I don't know.
The soundtrack, the multiple cuts.
I mean, I just love the soundtrack. I love it to death.
The Tangerine Dream one.
Love it.
I also love the Jerry Goldsmith one. Mm. Although I will tell you, for movie trivia aficionados, I picked this up when I was watching the director's cut. Like, what the hell? When they're actually lifting the plates, the reflective plates up. They play a musical cue, which is the theme from Psycho 2, also written by Jerry Goldsmith. What? But that's the Psycho 2 theme is played there.
Weird.
Yeah, because it fit the scene, or they didn't ever never compose music for it, or I don't know what the hell.
I'm telling you.
Interesting.
The score of this movie's not good. Tangerine Dream. Anyway.
All right. So that brings us time for summoning Igor. Igor, our mailman. Where are you, Igor?
Oh, my God, Igor.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Thank you, Igor. I have...
Hey, make sure if you and your friend are going to be in your room, I want the door open. I just... We're not going to have another incident like what happened last time. It took forever to clean up the mess.
Ugh. Gross.
Well... Okay, well, let's. Should we start with Legend and work backwards, or whatever. Start with last week's episode?
Let's do whatever.
All right, we'll start way back. Superman 3.
Yeah.
Travis had made an observation during Superman 3 that when he becomes Jerk Superman, Superman's costume changes color into the Brandon Routh Superman suit.
Right.
Ergo,
every Superman we've seen cinematically is evil.
Right.
That is why, and Zack Snyder's proven it. Like, I mean,
well, Crypticus writes in and says scientifically that holds water.
I think it does.
There you go.
Look at our society. Like, I mean, society's grown darker. Superman's grown darker. They change the color of his boots and cape. Now we don't even have red boots in the comics. He's got blue boots. It's like they're getting somehow like pure, like bright red and like bright blue is somehow for pussies. I don't know. It's like that's weak tit.
We'll bring it back in 2053.
Hopefully, right?
About Ghostbusters 2, last week's episode, Thomas Keane writes in and says, Ghostbusters 2 is a terrible movie. The reboot is better than Ghostbusters 2. There was hardly any busting in Ghostbusters 2, and busting makes me feel good. I agree, Tom.
I'm disappointed in you, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you can get away with saying part two is not good, but even, like, hawking a recommendation for the remake, shame on you.
Disappointed.
I didn't mind the remake.
Yeah.
Didn't mind it. I'm not saying it's because I'm, like, 50-50.
Only because you saw it in 3D. I stand by that.
Yeah, if you would have seen it in 2D, you would have fucking,
fun
you
would have, like. The I don't know, but anyway. By the end of it, I was having fun. Okay, so about Legend.
Yeah.
Andrew Kalbfus writes in and says, I've only seen the theatrical version, but it's a great movie. And Crypticus writes in and says, such a great, weirdo, creepy flick. Saw it in theaters the night of the release. I actually consider it more of a horror than a fantasy. The awesome Tangerine Dream score has become synonymous with the film for me, so I don't care for the Snow White ass music of the alternate version, even though that cut features more Meg Mucklebones and more scenes of those awesome goblins.
Agree, Crypticus.
Yeah, man, we didn't talk so much about the goblins in this episode, but they're cool, whatever. They rhyme, all that shit, whatever. Black is cold, black is ice, whatever, whatever.
Here be goblin paradise.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Black as night, black as pitch, blacker than the foulest witch.
Nick Hammond writes in and says, I've never seen this movie, but McFarlane Toys made a pretty sweet figure of darkness. He attached an image there. Yeah. I mean, that design is just...
Yeah, I've owned it.
Fucking fantastic. Oh, yeah, you have that one?
I used to. I've sold it.
The Movie Maniacs?
Yeah.
That is pretty awesome. And Sean Copeland writes in and says, I love this pick. Holly is definitely right to do Legend. I just bought the director's cut, but feel it was a little bloated.
Yes.
Definitely worthy. Definitely a worthy demonic entry, but Pennywise is more horrific to me. And he just wants to say, as a brand new listener to the podcast, it's one kick-ass show you guys are producing. But it's even better with Holly, hands down. She's a great addition
this
to the team dynamic.
Like slightly.
Wow, you should date this guy, right?
This sounds slightly slanted here. Yeah. No mention of how good the other members are. Right.
Shut up.
I guess so.
There you go.
Huh.
Thanks, well, John Copeland.
If you want to get a hold of us, listener, you can get a hold of us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. You can also find us on Twitter at Sat Freak Show. Or you can email us the old-fashioned way at SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com. And that means it's getting time.
Oh, my God. The bells toll for thee.
The hour has come, sirs.
And the appearance of Lurk means that we've come to the wrap-ups.
Sorry. It's a shudder up my spine.
So that means we're going to start with Travis because he's in the hot seat tonight.
I've always loved Legend just because I think of it as one of those movies that inspired creativity in me. But the more and more and more and more I watch it, so I'm like, I just cannot fucking deal with the pacing of the movie, with the, I love the scenes I love. But that's the problem I have with the movies. I only love darkness scenes and the goblin scenes. Anything with a bad guy in this movie is amazing. Like, I just don't buy. In a weird way, I almost find the interest is more in the darkness character, like, or in what the bad guys are doing. Because, I don't know.
They're driving the plot.
Yeah, all the good guy stuff is really just like, meh. I get it.
Yeah,
you're a reacting. Good guy. You're a the. But yeah, the bad guys are doing everything cool. They got all cool speeches. Everyone's fucking eyebrows are out of control in this movie. Even me and Sarah. Eyebrows out of fucking control.
That's the '80s.
Yeah, crazy. It's like there's gonna be close-ups in this movie.
Eyebrows, people. Glitter, and bubbles.
Yeah.
Crazy,
man.
So, I mean, I recommend this movie just based on what it is. But I personally, like, fuck, I don't know the next time I'll ever watch this movie just because I've seen it so goddamn much. I've just seen it so much.
But you would recommend it to another person?
Yeah, maybe. Because like I said, I've been there where I'm like, wasn't that great? And they're like, it's a fairy movie. And it's like, yeah. There's a fucking unicorn on the cover.
I feel like you're a little bitter because you watched the director's cut.
I'm definitely bitter because I watched the director's cut. I was just like, this is fucking bullshit. There's not three acts. There's just 1 hour and then another hour. That's what the director's cut
if
is.
We play a little Tangerine Dream for you right now.
I listened to Love for the Sun or whatever before I came here. Because I
got nothing
love
on Brian Ferry's Is Your Love Strong Enough?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
But I just, no, I've always felt that this movie, it doesn't pick up until they get on their way. I can, like, do without a majority of the opening of this movie. A majority of of the Princess and Jack shit and whatever. There's just so much of it that I just don't care about, that because I just don't know anything about the characters. They don't tell you anything about them. You know, two-dimensional princess, two-dimensional fucking Peter Pan guy, and whatever. But the makeup is awesome. And I guess that's it. So at least I recommend it. I just don't recommend it for myself to watch again.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of pretty much agree with what Travis has said here. I think it's a movie of style over substance, where the style is very strong. For 80s, you know, fantasy, I guess it strikes its own path by being, like we said, a fairy tale instead of a Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing. But, I mean, yeah, you have to see it, I think. Well, if you're, you know, interested in visual storytelling because of the, I mean, the interesting photography and all that, you know, whatever, the very active
image shit frames. Flying around. Yeah. For it.
You got to see it for the production design. You got to see it for the Rob Bottin. I mean, this is a star turn, I think, for Rob Bottin's makeup department. I mean, we were looking in the credits. There's like 50 guys working for him. I mean, it had to be, because you're designing all of these fantasy creatures. I mean, it really does seem like an undertaking, something to be applauded. And the design of like Blix, I like Meg Mucklebones, mm-hmm. and Darkness stand out to me as like, you know, I mean, those are definitive, you know?
Yeah.
For like goblins and a devil character. But it is really short on characterization. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always that's a problem with a lot of 80s fantasy movies, I want to say, more maybe even than like just movies that came out of the 80s. It seems like they were really, because I'm thinking like specifically like Krull, right? Or another movie that I've talked about, Space Hunter, you know, I just watched not too long ago. But they were, you know, like they're trying to follow, I think, the blockbuster template, which is we have a hero's journey and these people go on these kind of episodic adventures. But it's like, who are these people who are going on these adventures? It's like, well, they're just archetypes. And I don't think that's enough to engage you. You're engaged then by the visual interest, which is where the filmmakers are, because they have the technology now and the, yeah, you know, to sculpt things.
That's what
things
I was saying. The filmmakers, that's what they're into. They're not, yeah. They don't give a shit about the characters. They no, just
this
need
is
it.
Our excuse to make a fantasy world and realize it on film from the filmmaker's point of view. Yeah. It's like, that's why you do the movie. What's it about? Well, it's the oldest story in the book. It's there's light and
good
dark
versus evil.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting concept.
Yeah. Can't miss. So, you know, again, I prefer the director's cut, but I watched the theatrical cut here tonight. And the takeaway from it was, even though it's an alternate cut of the movie, it's still basically the same movie. The theatrical cut's like a leaner version. But it's the same. Legend is legend, either cut that you watch. So, I mean, I would recommend it, you know, with the caveat that it's not necessarily a really good story, but it's a great visual experience.
Mm-hmm. Legend. I love this movie. I honestly agree with what you guys are saying. I've always thought that this is a beautiful movie. The set design is fantastic. The makeup is amazing. It's gorgeous. Like the whole movie, I don't think there's one shot that you're not like, this is beautiful. Everything sparkles or everything's colorful. It's gorgeous. I agree. The characters leave a lot to be desired. The story is pretty basic. Light versus dark. There's a hero. There's a villain.
There's a damsel in distress.
There's a damsel in distress. I do think that we were talking about the moral earlier. I do think that the moral of the story is that your actions have consequences and you have to take responsibility for them. I think that's the overall, and it's flat. It is flat. I'll give you that. But I think that's the moral of the story. I love the makeup. I think Darkness is one of the greatest makeup characters of all film. I think is amazing.
When I went and saw Black Sabbath live with Ozzy, when they sang the part, Satan sitting there, he's smiling. They had that scene of him doing that big laugh in the seduction scene.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the best representation of the devil in a film. It's fantastic. And the goblins, I think, were amazing. I love Blix is a fantastic character, and his face is actually modeled after Keith Richards, which I think is hilarious. But yeah, I love this movie. I love it so much because it's like pure imagination. I love that. And when you're looking at it filmmaking perspective, it's just pure imagination. I think that's amazing. Yeah, I don't know if I would go nuts and be like, oh my God, everyone needs to see this movie. It's the best movie. I wouldn't say that, but I'd say this movie is an experience that everyone should have.
Have either of you seen Snow White and the Huntsman?
Yes. Nope.
Does Snow White and the Huntsman borrow heavily from the movie Legend?
Heavily? I would say it could be.
There's a unicorn? She is the most innocent, virtuous person who gets to wander into the forest and touch the unicorn. I think.
What? That wasn't a unicorn. It was just a white horse.
Was it a white horse? It was just a white horse. Somebody shoots it, right? And it runs away. Isn't that the same fucking scene? Okay.
No, it.
Seems to me they try to trap the horse.
No, it gets stuck in mud and she has to walk the rest of the way.
Oh, okay, fine. Never mind. All right,
Influenced, maybe. I'll go with influenced.
Big fantasy epic. Of recent years, recent vintage. So next week, that means it's my pick, right? I think so. I follow you. So next week, we're going to watch a forgotten, lost film. So nobody's seen it, but hopefully you have and you'll listen next week. It's called The Resurrected. It's a Dan O'Bannon film who made Return of the Living Dead and this. And it's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story called The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. So that's going to be next week. If you can seek it out. Chris Sarandon's in it. It's a good movie. Watch it. We'll talk about it next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.
Dark, 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 dark.